Ever since they had joined Professor Fowler, the two young geologists had been intrigued by the strange establishment 5 miles away down the valley. It was clearly a research organization of some type, and Davis had identified the tall stacks of an atomic power unit. That, of course, gave no clue to the work that was proceeding, but it did indicate its importance. There were still only a few thousand turbopiles in the world, and they were all reserved for major projects. There were dozens of reasons why two great scientists might have hidden themselves in this place. Most of the more hazardous atomic research was carried out as far as possible from civilization, and some had been abandoned altogether until laboratories in space could be set up. Yet it seemed odd that this work, whatever it was, should be carried out so close to what had now become the most important center of geological research in the world. It might, of course, be no more than a coincidence. Certainly the physicists had never shown any interest in their compatriots so near at hand. Davis was carefully chipping round one of the great footprints, while Barton was pouring liquid perspex into those already uncovered so that they could be preserved from harm in the transparent plastic. They were working in a somewhat absent-minded manner, for each was unconsciously listening for the sound of the jeep. Professor Fowler had promised to collect them when he returned from his visit, for the other vehicles were in use elsewhere, and they did not relish a 2-mile walk back to the camp in the broiling sun. Moreover, they wanted to have any news as soon as possible. "How many people," said Barton suddenly, "do you think they have over there?" Davis straightened himself up. "Judging from the buildings, not more than a dozen or so." "Then it might be a private affair, not an ADA project at all." "Perhaps. Though it must have pretty considerable backing. Of course, Henderson and Barnes could get that on their reputations alone." "That's where the physicists score," said Barton. "They've only got to convince some war department that they're on the track of a new weapon, and they can get a couple of million without any trouble." He spoke with some bitterness, for, like most scientists, he had strong views on this subject. Barton's views, indeed, were even more definite than usual, for he was a Quaker, and had spent the last year of the war arguing with not unsympathetic tribunals. The conversation was interrupted by the roar and clatter of the jeep, and the two men ran over to meet the professor. "Well?" they cried simultaneously. Professor Fowler looked at them thoughtfully, his expression giving no hint of what was in his mind. "Have a good day," he said at last. "Come off it, Chief," protested Davis. "Tell us what you found out." The professor climbed out of the seat and dusted himself down. "I'm sorry, boys," he said with some embarrassment. "I can't tell you a thing. And that's flat." There were two united wails of protest, but he waved them aside. "I've had a very interesting day, but I've had to promise not to say anything about it. Even now, I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's something pretty revolutionary. As revolutionary, perhaps, as atomic power. But Dr. Henderson is coming over tomorrow. See what you can get out of him." For a moment, both Barton and Davis were so overwhelmed by the sense of anticlimax that neither spoke. Barton was the first to recover. "Well, surely there's a reason for this sudden interest in our activities." The professor thought this over for a moment. "Yes, it wasn't entirely a social call," he admitted. "They think I may be able to help them. Now, no more questions, unless you want to walk back to camp." Dr. Henderson arrived on the site in the middle of the afternoon. He was a stout elderly man, dressed rather incongruously in a dazzling white laboratory smock and very little else. Though the garb was eccentric, it was eminently practical in so hot a climate. Davis and Barton were somewhat distant when Professor Fowler introduced them. They still felt that they had been snubbed and were determined that their visitors should understand their feelings. But Henderson was so obviously interested in their work that they soon thawed, and the professor left them to show him round the excavations while he went to supervise the natives. The physicist was greatly impressed by the picture of the world's remote past that lay exposed before his eyes. For almost an hour, the two geologists took him over the workings yard by yard, talking of the creatures who had gone this way and speculating about future discoveries. The track which Professor Fowler was following now lay in a wide trench, running away from the main excavation, for he had dropped all other work to investigate it. At its end, the trench was no longer continuous. To save time, the professor had begun to sink pits along the line of the footprints. The last sounding had missed altogether, and further digging had shown that the great reptile had made a sudden change of course. This is the most interesting bit, said Barton to the slightly wilting physicist. You remember those earlier places where it had stopped for a moment to have a look around? Well, here it seems to have spotted something, and has gone off in a new direction at a run, as you can see from the spacing. I shouldn't have thought such a brute could run. Well, it was probably a pretty clumsy effort, but you can cover quite a bit of ground with a 15-foot stride. We're going to follow it as far as we can. We may even find what it was chasing. I think the professor has hopes of discovering a trampled battlefield with the bones of the victim still around. That would make everyone sit up. Dr. Henderson smiled. Thanks to Walt Disney, I can picture the scene rather well. Davis was not very encouraging. It was probably only the missus banging the dinner gong, he said. The most infuriating part of our work is the way everything can peter out when it gets most exciting. The strata have been washed away, or there's been an earthquake, or, worse still, some silly fool has smashed up the evidence because he didn't recognize its value. Henderson nodded in agreement. I can sympathize with you, he said. That's where the physicist has the advantage. He knows he'll get the answer eventually, if there is one. He paused rather diffidently, as if weighing his words with great care. It would save you a lot of trouble, wouldn't it, if you could actually see what took place in the past, without having to infer it by these laborious and uncertain methods? You've been a couple of months following these footsteps for 100 yards, and they may lead nowhere for all your trouble. There was a long silence. Then Barton spoke in a very thoughtful voice. Naturally, Doctor, we're rather curious about your work, he began. Since Professor Fowler won't tell us anything, we've done a good deal of speculating. Do you really mean to say that? The physicist interrupted him rather hastily. Don't give it any more thought, he said. I was only daydreaming. As for our work, it's a very long way from completion, but you'll hear all about it in due course. We're not secretive, but, like everyone working in a new field, we don't want to say anything until we're sure of our ground. Why, if any other paleontologist came near this place, I bet Professor Fowler would chase them away with a pickaxe. That's, not quite true, smiled Davis. He'd be much more likely to set them to work. But, I see your point of view. Let's hope we don't have to wait too long.